Hey everybody, welcome back to the Scene Stealers podcast. We took a couple weeks off. I see we have 120 movies to review
today.
Is that correct?
Yeah, we're gonna make sure we get everything that we missed in the interim.
Okay. This is Trevor McGee here with Eric Moline, Trey Hawk, and Claire Rock. We are going to talk about three movies today, right, Eric?
Yeah, that sounds good. Trey Hawk and Claire Rock.
your morning zoo crew. Scooter and the Bird. All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about, I guess, the big one is 007 Skyfall. And then we're also going to hit Sessions with John Hawks and Helen Hunt. And then what's the third one?
Let's start with Smashed.
Smashed.
Yeah.
Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad.
Yes.
All right. Go for it.
And actually The Imposter as well. I'm going to squeeze that in there because that's kind of a little movie. But I just want to talk about these quickly. They're opening in Kansas City this weekend. Smashed is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who most people will remember from Scott Pilgrim versus the World, who I remember from Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, the half of Grindhouse that he did.
And no one remembers her from The Thing.
Well, no one and why should we, really? But, so her and Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad are an alcoholic couple. And they're both in their late 20s. She works as a school teacher, and he doesn't really work that much. And basically it's about this relationship where they're very codependent. And every night, even on weeknights, they're going out and they're drinking and they're having fun. They're waking up with hangovers. And she's going to work the next day and puking in the trash can in front of the students.
All been there.
And telling the principal that she's pregnant. And it just kind of goes downhill from there. It's a very short movie. It's a really simple indie movie. It's shot on a very low budget. But it's actually really effective because it avoids a lot of the pitfalls of, alcoholic movies by just really focusing on this codependent relationship and her struggle to not only go to Alcoholics Anonymous and kind of get this under control, but her struggle to do this with a spouse who isn't necessarily supporting her.
Right.
But they're very much in love. And that's another thing. Like, this is not one of those movies where there's all these screaming matches and things like that. It's actually a nice portrait of two people who love each other very much. Nick Offerman from TV's Parks and Recreation is also in this movie in a very uncomfortable supporting role, meaning that he's terrifically uncomfortable, and that's the purpose as a guy who originally takes her to AA. But Smashed premiered at Sundance this year, and there's a big push for Mary Elizabeth Winstead for Best Actress. It's a pretty weak field this year, so she might get that. Okay. She's very good. I think Aaron Paul's really good as well.
I was going to ask, he's got half a season of Breaking Bad left, and then his career is kind of in one of those transition periods. Do you think he's ready for movies?
He's really good in this film. Again, it's a very small indie film, but I think it's definitely worth seeing. It kind of charmed me, especially by the end when it kind of feels like a more whole piece of work because it moves so kind of slowly. It doesn't have this obvious plot arc.
You said it's slow moving, but how long is the movie actually?
It's under 90 minutes. Yeah. So it actually accomplishes quite a bit.
Sweet.
And then there's this
film. What's your rock fist?
My rock fist, a solid rock fist up for this movie. And then there's this movie called The Imposter, which is a crazy documentary about a true story that I vaguely remember seeing on the news many, many years ago about a kid who is missing in the United States, and a kid who turns up in Spain and claims to be that kid. I'm not going to go too far into the plot details, but this is a documentary where it's very Errol Morris-like and Man on Wire-like in that there's a lot of recreations or reenactments that are very well done, very artfully done. So you've got the main character, this kid kind of narrating the story and telling the story, and then he's also playing himself in these reenactments where the narration overlaps and he's talking as an on-camera interview, and then all of a sudden he's talking in the scene. It's a really interesting movie, but let's just say that he goes to America and his quote, new American family doesn't seem to recognize that he's not their son and welcomes him with open arms, and it just gets crazier from there. But this is one of those movies where it's not a big social problem film.
Right.
So it's not going to win the Oscar for Best Documentary.
It doesn't make you want to kill yourself, so it's not going to win.
No, yeah, exactly. But, man, this is a well-put-together documentary. It's definitely worth seeing. It's entertaining all the way through, and you're kind of trying to second-guess what's going to happen next. And then there's some stuff at the end that just puts a whole new spin on this character. Very much like Man on the Wire, or Man on Wire again, where, you know, that main guy is narrating the film. So it's really from his point of view. It'll be interesting to see if we get more documentaries that are branching out and trying different things like this.
So what's your rock fist on them?
Solid rock fist up as well.
Man.
Yeah.
See, if we can follow up with The Imposter at the Oscars, then Undefeated, you know, then it's like we'll have a legacy. We'll have a legacy of non-wanting to kill yourself documentaries going.
Yeah, that would be a great trend.
I still haven't seen Undefeated. Did you guys watch it?
It's okay, and it doesn't want to make you want to kill yourself.
I think the only reason that movie won, and I don't want to be a jerk or anything because I haven't seen it, but it was because it was really pushed by the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll just leave
that
at that.
Yeah. I mean, it was not mind-blowing by any stretch of the imagination, but it was good.
Yeah. Cool. And we can't review it now, but you've seen Searching for Sugar Man, right?
I have, and we can review it now. It's great. Yeah.
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
Just real quick, rock fist rating.
It's a solid rock fist up as well.
Awesome.
Here's the thing. If you've seen the 60 Minutes documentary about Searching for Sugar Man, which is how I was first introduced to it about 2 months ago on 60 Minutes. They ran one of their little 20-minute stories. They pilfered scenes from the entire movie and then interviewed somebody from the film to kind of tell that story as well.
Yeah.
But basically, they just re-edited the film into 20 minutes. So don't search that out.
Just go watch the movie.
The movie is put together in a very specific way for your enjoyment. And watching 60 Minutes first will spoil everything.
Cool.
So don't do any research. Just watch Searching for Sugar Man. It will be one of the five best documentary nominees at the Oscars this year, I predict. Well-told story.
Well, that's great. We've got – so that was three really solid reviews to start off. So now let's talk about Skyfall.
And then we'll talk about the Sessions after that.
And the Sessions.
Yeah.
We'll do Sessions next. All right. So Skyfall, newest entry in the 007 series. It's Daniel Craig reprising his role as James Bond. The movie was put on temporary hold because MGM went bankrupt and the future of the character was kind of, or franchise rather, was kind of in question. They released like two more box sets and got back in the black. And so now we've got this movie, Sam Mendes directing. First action movie? Would that be accurate?
Oh, he did Jarhead.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's
known for American Beauty, Revolutionary Road.
Right. Yeah. More of a, you know, kind of Oscar bait kind of.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Oscar winner.
Oscar
for
winning,
American Beauty.
Right. So,
for better or worse.
Got the new Skyfall, Daniel Craig, and Javier Bardem, Judi Dench, Ralph Fiennes, the kid from Sessions, or not Sessions,
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas.
Ben Whishaw.
Ben Whishaw.
Yeah.
Right. Ben Whishaw.
But more importantly,
really
all of those people,
like
Roger Deakins.
Yeah, Roger Deakins.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
he's the
me,
reason to go and see this movie.
Yeah.
I agree. And so who wants to start with Roger Deakins?
Yeah, let's talk about award-winning cinematographer.
No, non-award.
Every
award but the
consistently
Oscar.
Snubbed.
Yeah, every other
award-winning. You know, and I feel like Roger Deakins, he's like, fuck it, if I can't get an Oscar, I'm going to make a Bond movie. And he did. I mean, it is a beautiful-looking film through and through. Definitely edgier as far as the look and the lighting and the way he uses, you know,
There's a fight scene early on that's just the one that's backlit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All silhouettes.
Amazing.
That's
amazing.
That was stunning.
Yeah. And, I mean, even the fight in the dragon pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a dragon pit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No sharks with lasers, but.
Yeah.
No sharks with lasers.
But, I mean, but that's the thing is that, like, he's, you know, he is capable of lighting and using his space in such a way to, like, make things, one, clear and easy to understand, but at the same time so exciting and just beautiful to look at. So even the ludicrousness of having a dragon pit where two men are fighting in it and worried about getting devoured by dragons.
Yeah. Now this is
interesting. This whole mix of light
you still
and
are invested
and,
in it.
Yeah.
I just heard you say easy to follow. And I thought that the action in this movie was incredibly easy to follow, and it was really skillfully edited together in kind of a Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark type way, where it's very clearly action following action because of action. And I read a review recently, an early review, where the person said that. That the action scenes were incomprehensible.
No.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that at all.
Maybe conceptually, because there are some conceptual things, like things that they do that are unbelievable.
Right. At the beginning, he's basically the roadrunner. Yeah.
Exactly.
He's basically the roadrunner at the beginning, that long, drawn-out chase and fight scene. Like, I mean, there's some, like, I won't spoil it, but he does something early on that would break every bone in his body.
Oh, sure.
Like, yeah, you know? Doesn't he always?
Well,
I mean, that's kind of fun,
not
right?
To this extent. I mean, there's a difference between, like, falling a little bit further than a normal person can fall and then slamming a motorcycle into the side of a bridge so that you can catapult yourself onto a train.
Right.
That was awesome.
It was awesome.
I landed and I was like, oh, God.
But, I mean, if that's what they're talking about, the incomprehensibility of the action scenes, is that it's gone so. See, I totally disagree with that.
I'm,
you know, I think they're easy to follow. It's easy to understand the physics and the reality that go into these action sequences. Right. Now, whether they're believable to you
I
feel the same way.
James
I don't
Bond.
Care. It's James Bond. He is our modern superhero. Yeah. He's our real life spy dude. So let's just go with
say
it.
Spy douche.
Spy douche. Spy douche.
Claire, what do you think?
Overall, I really liked the movie. I mean, as a Bond movie, it was really reminiscent of the older ones, which is why I liked it, because it had a really silly and over-the-top bad guy, which
I always
like that, because it's like, it's not just some guy who's like, I'm going to destroy the world. It's like, I'm going to destroy M16.
Right.
And it was great. I didn't really care for the action sequences for the most part because they didn't seem really action-y. None of them were really gripping. There was like action, action, action. Really incredible, amazing piece of action. Action dying, nothing happens. They weren't really like sturdy action moments. I did think that the movie was a little long for how easy the bad guy was.
Yeah. 2.5 hours.
They could have trimmed 15, and I would have been fine with that.
Towards the end.
Really. Yeah. They could have trimmed the whole last 30 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know. One of my big complaints, I guess, about it is, like, I like the idea, and they really used this idea in Casino Royale, actually, that James Bond's a code name, and that explains why there's so many.
Yeah.
And he's just a guy that becomes this person. After, you know, receiving a 007 status, I liked the idea of them being sort of interchangeable and knowing that they're like that's what they're there for. So when the movie tries to give him a backstory and kind of deepen the character, you know, I'm usually not one to argue against character depth, but with a character like James Bond, I don't need to know that he has abandonment issues, or I don't need to know that there are mommy issues.
Casino Royale
at play.
Was really great because of the background of the character. Because you know,
but that was directly related to his. You know, I don't want
to his current.
It was it was related to his mission, and it was his first mission. He learned a hard lesson that you don't get attached. You know, and that kind of solidified the idea that these guys need to be interchangeable, because if they try and live a full life as James Bond, they'll get hurt, they'll get sloppy, people will die.
And there's another idea in this movie: the idea of true dedication to your country,
right?
And that means if that means giving up your life because somebody else is sacrificing you, that's okay. You have to understand that that's part of your mission, and
And to Trevin's point, I think when this feels like a Sam Mendes movie, it doesn't feel like a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
You know, and that Sam Mendes, being Sam Mendes, at times actively works against being a really effective...
So what would an example of a Sam Mendes scene be?
Skyfall.
Well...
Just without spoiling.
Yeah. Javier Bardem is in the church, and I'm not going to go into it any more than that so that it doesn't totally spoil, but as soon as Javier Bardem is in the church, that whole sequence there, until that moment is resolved, that feels like this kind of awkward conversation, this pointed language, this back and forth, the emotional trauma, that feels like Sam Mendes. I mean, everything from American Beauty to, you know, whatever else. I mean, exploring the emotional depth. And I agree. I'm never one to argue against character development.
Right.
But what I'm arguing against is these sort of emotional digressions, which don't necessarily build up the character in a satisfying way, but are a way to kind of like crowbar in a little extra.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's just like, no, I want him, I kind of want him to be emotionally stoic and tough. And right. that's the character that he is.
Exactly.
And you making him actively weak works against what's going on. Yeah. You know? So, yeah.
I don't think that was I agree the movie could have been shorter and there were weak points in it.
Yeah.
That, for me, wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
I actually liked the emotional depth and their attempt to inject that kind of thing. I think that's a staple of this new reboot, Daniel Craig reboots.
Yeah.
But for me, what it was is that in a Bond movie, there's more of a mystery.
Yeah.
And to me, the thing that could have been shortened was if this movie was going to turn into, and it did, mm-hmm. a straight-up revenge thriller,
sure.
it could have done that with a lot less plot machinations that didn't really matter. And it seems like a lot of time was spent proving how smart Javier Bardem's character was because he was five steps ahead of everybody else. But as the plot revealed itself, those finding out that he was that far ahead of everybody else wasn't that exciting or engaging. It
no.
was just kind of, well, we've happen. Seen the Joker before, so yeah. you know what I mean? And for me, I like the emotional depth and I love the action. If I was going to trim anything, I would have trimmed the plot itself, mm-hmm. the suspense plot, because it wasn't necessarily suspenseful after a while.
Yeah, I think once you get about halfway through it or even into the third act, I mean, that's where you could trim down
yeah.
because we've already figured out the mystery has been solved. We know what's
right.
at stake. We
yeah.
know what's going on. Now let's just get to it.
Do we need a 20-minute chase scene
and a boring fight? Chase scene?
Yeah.
Or do we need?
Yeah.
Or could we have
yeah.
done with a 5-minute one?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. The pretty much going off that the whole from the moment. I don't want to give away plot stuff, but that what comes after that chase scene and then all the way up to the end of the movie, I just feel like could have been streamlined, shortened, you know, it's not affecting. And especially once you find out what Skyfall means and where that takes the characters, like from that point on, I was just kind of checked out.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to go.
So what's the bottom line, Eric?
The bottom line for me is I feel like we've kind of nitpicked this thing to death, but...
Because it's a solid movie. It's easy to nitpick something.
Right.
Like, when the overall movie is good, it's really easy to kind of point out the cracks.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what we've done.
Well, I'm not a Bond aficionado by any means.
Hmm.
I've probably seen a third of all of the Bond films, at best,
hmm.
and not liked the majority of them.
Yeah,
I think Casino Royale is the high point of the entire series from what I've seen out of those third. And I think that this is the second best Bond movie that I've ever seen. So I still am going to give this a solid rock fist up. It was entertaining almost all the way through. And I really enjoyed their attempt to put some emotional depth into it. And I really did like the interplay between Judi Dench and Daniel Craig. And like I said, exquisite cinematography and set design and really good action set pieces. So for me, for a Bond movie, that's a solid rock fist up.
Mm-hmm. Trevin?
You know, I got to say the same. It's a solid rock fist up. I was very impressed. I would love that this was like a new trend of them getting a high caliber director and cinematographer to really put their stamp on these films. Because that's what really stands out to me is just how well it was put together. So, you know, we kind of nitpicked it, but overall I'd say it's my favorite Bond movie, for sure.
Wow.
Casino Royale is a close second, but after this one, I would say it's my favorite.
All right, Claire.
Okay.
So is that solid then?
Yes, it's solid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm also going to say solid rock fist up. I mean, again, we've all said it, nitpick. You can nitpick this movie to death, but you can sit down and watch it and enjoy the whole thing as it's going on. I wouldn't say it's my favorite Bond movie or my second favorite Bond movie. I like the older ones a lot better, but that's just me.
I grew up with James Bond. It was one of the film series that my dad would consistently take me to, made sure that to fill in old Bonds when, you know, you could get them easily on VHS.
I was
going
to say, that must have been pretty brutal, going to the Roger Moore movies, like Octopussy and things like that.
But when you start as a kid, it you know, it's like right. you have a nostalgia for those films.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy because all eight-year-olds have terrible taste in movies,
yeah.
so that's exactly the time that you need to see those Roger Moore films.
Don't they shoot laser guns in Moonraker?
They do.
Yeah, yeah.
They do.
Star Wars laser guns.
They do. The first one that I remember seeing clearly, I remember Live and Let Die. I remember Moonraker to some extent playing on early HBO. Definitely Octopussy, For Your Eyes Only. So I wouldn't say a Bond aficionado because I don't know that I get that fanboyish about it. But this is probably one of the series that kind of will hit sort of emotional pressure points in me and will make me a little bit more forgiving. Knowing what I know about Bond films, I would probably say that I'm on the fence between a minor rock fist up and a solid rock fist up.
Get off the fence.
I'm going to go minor rock fist up. I want to give it a solid rock fist up just because of Roger Deakins, and this is a beautiful film to look at. But there is some subversion to the normal, I guess, plot structure of a Bond film that I don't know that I accept the risk, and I think that's exciting that they took a risk with this film and it does something different. But I don't know that it satisfies me the way some of the older Bonds do. And so I feel like if you love Bond, you need to a little bit hedge your bets with this one just so that you can go in and enjoy it. Because it is an enjoyable film. And I think if you raise the expectations and the bar too high for somebody who knows Bond, who loves Bond, it could totally disappoint them.
So would you say then, in the immortal words of Rat from their Invasion of Your Privacy album, that Skyfall was dangerous but worth the risk?
Yes. Yes. I would say exactly that.
You've been waiting to make that.
I was waiting for this entire – as soon as he said
you
risk,
tuned out on everything else he said. I just waited for that.
Yeah. There's a lot of people out there that just got that rat joke.
Yeah.
Because I had to explain it.
You nailed that rat. That key rat demographic. You just got him.
All right. So let's go from Skyfall straight into The Sessions.
Oh, boy. All right.
Did anybody see this except for you?
No, it's just me. You're going to see it tonight. You guys will probably see it this weekend. We all got our screeners in the mail so we can vote our awards by the end of the season. By the way, we may have a very exciting awards announcement coming up in the next week or two, which has to do with the Critics' Choice Awards, which is going to be on the CW this year.
CW.
They're moving up from VH1 to, what is that, basic cable to almost Fox status, the CW?
Yeah.
And I'm a voting member of that body, which is awesome.
Are you going to go?
Well, I might.
Should.
I might. And maybe some of our listeners will be able to go as well.
Ooh.
Let's just leave it there. So, anyway, so keep listening, kids. Okay, so The Sessions premiered at Sundance this year when it was called The Surrogate. It stars John Hawkes as a paraplegic who can't move anything below his neck, and his entire life is spent on a stretcher? Not a stretcher,
iron
Jesus.
Lung.
Well, he's in an iron lung, right, and when he goes out in public, he has to be wheeled around on his cart, so to speak, his bed. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, using all of the wrong terms here to describe
nice
this.
Yeah. They carry him around in a rickshaw.
But you know what? I'm just keeping with the
army cot.
I'm just keeping with the lighthearted spirit of this fun little movie.
Yeah.
And when I say little, I mean it's under 90 minutes, which is bizarre for.
I thought you were making some reference to the nudity of John Hawkes.
The nudity?
This little movie.
This little movie. Actually, we don't know about that because the only person we get to see naked on a regular basis is Helen Hunt, who is a shoe-in for a supporting actress nomination here, although she arguably might should be considered in the actress category, but I think
Did she just become Southern? Did you just might should?
No, I don't think so.
Should be considered.
Yeah, I just chose my words in the middle of my sentence rather than the whole time. Okay, so basically we have she's the surrogate. Mm-hmm. She's going to, in essence, have intercourse with John Hawkes, who is a virgin at the ripe age of 38.
Mm-hmm.
And he is this incredibly smart, funny, talented writer. And he falls in love with his female nurses a lot and decides that he needs to have sex. And when he finds out that there are these people that do this for a living. She's not necessarily a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but it is a clinical thing that she does when she goes and performs sexual acts on people that wouldn't normally be able to do that. Mm. Because of the wry sense of humor, and because this guy is so... It's based on a true story, by the way.
Yeah.
So how much of that, you know...
He wrote his own stories.
Right. How much of the actual plot of the film is true remains to be seen. But John Hawkes is very engaging, especially for somebody who can't move at all. So we're just talking about a performance, you know, basically based on facial expressions. Right. And he's really good, and he will get an Oscar nomination, absolutely. But the movie, William H. Macy plays his priest and confessor, and he becomes a friend, and this character is very religious, and so there's a really interesting subplot going on between those two guys where the priest is challenged a lot of the things that the Catholic Church believes in are challenged because he really wants this guy to do this thing, and of course premarital sex is bad. So with that all in place, the actors are fine. The script is very engaging and very funny, and it moves like lightning, to its detriment. I think that this film could have spent more time with the characters, but sometimes it cuts from one scene to another so quickly because there's a punchline or something that the audience is supposed to take with them into the next scene, and they want to get that plot moving, that it's almost jarring sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a big crowd pleaser. I certainly enjoyed it while I was watching it. I was very wrapped up in the characters. It's a little bit cheesy, but because of the self-deprecating sense of humor that John Hawkes' character has, he tends to undercut that cheesiness a lot, and so I can forgive it for a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's very strange that it's so fast-paced that I think it's a little bit... Most people will not notice this or care, but I like the characters so much I wanted to spend more time with them and go beyond this kind of one-dimensional punchline view of his world. And they do that a little bit, and it does have emotional resonance, but I think it could have had more. If there is a longer cut, I'd be interested to see that. Mm-hmm. But I think this movie is going to play very well, and I thought it was a solid film overall. Kind of nitpicking it again to say that it shouldn't have moved so fast, and nobody else
can
really say that.
But that can really affect how a movie works.
Absolutely,
so
if this is a film that's based on the charmingness of its cast, mm-hmm. then you really need to, at times, let that cast have some breathing room.
But it's clearly edited for comedy, and mm-hmm. I think that because of that, the film suffers a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that the filmmaker was perhaps a little scared
making this a drama?
Honestly, this territory is well-worn.
Sure.
Right? We've seen lots of inspirational stories about really smart, clever people who can't use their bodies and who instead engage with their brain. Mm-hmm. And so that was a pitfall that he was probably trying to avoid.
Right.
So
sure.
it's a tough call. Either way, it's a really fun movie, and a lot of nudity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of frank sexual discussion that will offend people, and also disarm them. And
so
I think that's its greatest thing.
So if you're a 15-year-old boy who's into middle-aged women,
you're going to love this. But if you're a 60-year-old person with very conservative values, you will be charmed and disarmed by this movie, I think.
Uh-huh.
And on a cultural level, I think that's important. I think that's kind of cool that it does that. Because it does play to that crowd. This is not an edgy movie by any means. This is very traditional. I'm going to give it a solid rock fist up, like everything else on this podcast.
That's good. Sometimes you need some positive.
Yeah, this is the feel-good podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
We're
great.
We're
going
to end the podcast with Salisbury Hill and just fade out. We don't actually have the rights.
I thought you were going to deliver the credits aloud while I played that in the background.
Stop that. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, Trevin always gets embarrassed when Salisbury Hill.
It cuts
a little too close to home.
Yeah.
Same
so
man to that song.
Next week we have Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
We also have
another John Hawkes role.
Yeah, John Hawkes is
not
in that
as Lincoln,
movie for about 10 minutes. He and every other actor in Hollywood. Yeah. James Spader's in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Can I just say that?
Is Matthew Modine in Lincoln?
He's not.
Should be. Is Corbin Burnson in Lincoln?
He probably is.
Yeah.
He's probably an extra by now.
Yeah, he was a gaffer.
Yeah.
He's a gaffer.
Is anybody going to the animated movie, Rise of the Guardians, this weekend?
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Not at all.
No.
Not even a little.
No.
The animated category is really interesting this year. There's a lot to talk about.
We'll make Claire go to Rise of the Guardians.
You have to watch it.
It just looks so good.
I heard it was good. It's supposed to be like the front runner for best animated.
That's what we have Alan for.
But Wreck-It Ralph also got really good reviews. Yeah, that is what we have Alan for.
Thanks, Alan.
All right. Well, we'll end it here, and we will be back next week. Let's just say that, and then we'll just have to rely on Trevin to make it so.
Yeah. All right.
That's all. Just me.
Adios.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.